Ryan turned and waved to his group.
Let's go, now!
In seconds, they'd loaded aboard the sailboat and ducked down out of sight. Ryan took up a position aft, easing the styron to position on the railing. He led the first wag he spotted, then squeezed the trigger. Out of control, the wag slid crazily down the steep incline and into a small rowboat less than a dozen yards from the boat Ryan had chosen. The Cold Hearts pulled back and formed a skirmish line, knowing now that the group was armed. Ryan watched the sailor's boys shinny up the masts like daring monkeys. They cut the sailcloth free in a heartbeat as their father cast off the lines. By the time they reached the decks, the wind was already starting to fill the sails and pull the boat into smooth motion. The boat came about, taking to the water and charging upstream despite the current. The sailor kept his hand on the wheel, working the boom. Ryan came down from the slightly raised prow and walked along the side facing the incline where the slaggers raced on the bank.
Goddamn slaggers, they're fucking up my sails! Stay low, boys!
Ryan signaled to Doc to keep them under his eye. There was every possibility the man had weapons aboard his craft and might seek to address his current situation. The little girl held on to her dead father until Christy took her into her arms and pulled her to safety. Of the original group of captives, only Mary and her husband Elmore, one of the women, and the children were left. The three of the group that had been killed were shoved over the edge, quickly falling behind the wake of the sailboat. For a moment, the bodies floated in the water. Then the fish began to feed, dragging them under.
Bad place to go in the water. There's muti crawfish longer than a man's arm that got a real appetite for meat. Seen men and women dragged under, they get too close to the water when they're fishing from the banks.
I'll keep that in mind.
Ryan watched the slaggers disappear to their rear.
What are the chances they'll be able to find us? What's so damn funny?
Well, it'd be kind of hard to hide the river, wouldn't it? And they know which direction we're headed out in.
Ryan felt the back of his neck burn with anger. Too damn many things going on, and he wasn't thinking straight. Christy's situation wasn't leaving him much room for thinking about other things.
Where are we going?
Upriver.
Got a destination in mind?
I'll know it when we get there.
If you go far enough up this river till we reach the rough country, the slaggers ain't gonna be so apt to follow. They live off the easy pickings around Idaho Falls.
Ryan nodded, catching Jack's eye, and letting him know watching the sailor was his responsibility. The albino gave him a short nod. Ryan reloaded the Steyr, noticing how low his ammo was getting, then went back to join Christy. She still held the little girl. Christy put her hand on the girl's head for a moment, then grimaced. Abruptly, the little girl passed out, every muscle relaxing.
It's better for her this way. She'll sleep, then maybe we'll be in a better place.
How'd you do that?
I don't know, lover. I just knew that I could.
Did you decide to do that, or did...
Florin?
Yeah.
You know, I've never done anything like that before in my life. It must have been Florin. Hard to imagine a crusty old bitch like that caring enough to do something like this.
Being able to do something like that would make it a lot easier to steal children away in the dead of night.
Mildred came and took the little girl away and went to join JB, giving Ryan and Christy room.
I can't live like this, lover.
I know.
I mean what I'm saying, Ryan. If I have to live like this, I'll chill myself to get it over with. I can't have anybody in my head like this. And I can feel her, wandering around in the back areas of my brain, learning everything she can. She'll use it against me when she gets the chance.
I won't let that happen. Long as you're with me, you're going to be safe.
Ryan put an arm across her shoulders, pulling her close and holding her tight. But he had to wonder just how true his words were. Nearly 2 hours passed. There'd been no sign of the Cold Hearts or anyone else. The area upriver from the Ville appeared pristine and uninhabited. Ryan stood near the sailor, watching as the man handled the boat with ease. The green water of the river stretched out before them, alternately sandwiched in between stony banks and areas where pockets of trees and brush filled out an early summer growth. The sailor piloted his craft around a sandbar that stuck out nearly to the center of the river.
We're gonna need some ammo and supplies.
We'll get them.
The armorer took out his mini-sextant and took a reading from the sun. They were losing the daylight now. When he finished, He made a few brief notations on a map of the area from his pack.
River's changed locations. We won't be able to use it as a marker to the other areas on the map. And coming back down the river past Idaho Falls to return to the redoubt ain't gonna be a wise idea, not with the Slaggers marking territory.
The river changes every 15 or 20 years. Every once in a while, the river even changes direction. 30 years ago, when I was just a boy, it flowed the other way. And my grandpop, he told me that it changed direction when he was a boy, too. Quakes somewhere along the way shift things enough to cause the changes. Made things interesting around the Ville for a while. Because my Da and Grandpop salvaged a lot of pre-dark things for a few years. Made a handsome living at it, trading with folks.
What's your name?
Morse. My boys are named Bud and Sandy.
Seated ahead of the wheel, the boys both nodded at Ryan. They didn't seem overly friendly about it. Their skin had been browned by the sun, and they were whipcord lean from the hard life they led. They'd stripped down to cut off denims and carried broad-bladed knives at their waists in plastic sheaths. Their hair trailed well past their shoulders, done up in braids that kept it out of their faces.
River still come from the north?
There's a fork about 40 miles north and east of here. Comes from north on into what used to be Montana there, and the other fork comes out of Wyoming.
Those areas populated?
Some. Mainly people who don't like being around other people. Get back in the woods, live by themselves, take what they need from the land.
Overhearing their conversation, Doc walked up and joined the men.
Morse, what kind of supplies do you have on board?
You're gonna take my boat and steal from me too? Fuck! We're gonna have to talk about my wages at some point.
You must have a set of brass balls big as your head.
Man's got a price in mind, usually the first sign of a professional.
You ain't gonna find no son of a bitch knows this river any better than I do, and that's a damn fact.
Ryan had to admire the man. Morse had grit. The trader always cut a little slack for men who stood up for themselves. Took a little off the bottom line when he sat down at a table to cut a deal.
What kind of jack are you looking for?
I got a bottle of smooth-drinking whiskey down in the hold. If we're going to Dicker, we ain't gonna do it dry. You let one of my boys go get it?
Sure. Doc?
I shall accompany the lad, my dear Ryan.
Doc and Bud were quick to bring up the whiskey, along with small ceramic cups molded by hand and fired in a post-Newcost kiln. Morse in Jack's hands and went back to join Christy. She was asleep when he got there. Her face turned in toward her arm. He settled in beside her and let the motion of the river lull him. His hand, though, never stayed far from the Sig Sauer.
You believe you can fix these, John?
JB looked up at Mildred, his lap covered by most of the handguns he'd found in the hold. There were eight of them in all, four Colt 1911 Model 45s and four 9mm Beretta Model 92Ss. Two of the 45s had satin stainless steel finishes, and the rest were all matte black. JB took one of the 45s from the military footlocker they'd been held in.
Can you fix a broken arm?
I don't fix a broken arm. I just set it, and it fixes itself.
I don't fix these either, but in my hands, they fix themselves.
Best eat while you got the chance. Keep your strength up.
I'll get to it.
The light in Junie's hold was dim. There were no portholes. Mainly, JB figured, because much of the hold could be below water if she carried a heavy load. The lantern he'd lit hung on a long hook attached to the wall, sticking out far enough that even though the lantern swung, it never connected. The pale yellow light ghosted the room, giving it a surreal quality. It was nowhere near natural light. But that was fine with JB, because if he'd had to, he could have field-stripped and inspected the handguns, and probably even fixed them, in the blackest night. The room held a small gas stove and kitchen. A warped table with benches screwed into the floor occupied the center of the room, and there was a mass of mattresses, sheets, and pillows that served as a bed. Personally, JB figured the bedding needed airing out in the worst way. Mildred just sat, watching him.
Damn, but you smile like a little boy when you got your hands on a new weapon.
JB felt his smile get a little bigger. He couldn't help himself. Weapons had always been his passion. These guns were going to be no challenge at all compared to some of the projects he'd taken on. Whoever had stored them in the footlocker had removed the firing pins. It had been too much to hope that they would be in the footlocker, but if he had access to a machinist's shop for a day or two, he could get them all replaced. There'd be some repair work on the slides and other inner mechanisms because there'd been some water damage. From the looks of the rust, he figured that the water damage had happened in the past couple of months. maybe when the footlocker had been dredged up by Morse and his sons. Finding a machinist's shop, though, was going to be a problem. And then there was ammo. The footlocker was curiously bare of ammunition. JB guessed that Morse had cached the ammunition and sold it, or stored it. Neither he nor Ryan believed that the boat was as defenseless as her captain would have them believe. He looked up, pieces of the gun strung across his knees and the surrounding floor. Mildred still sat there across from him, pulling her knees in close and wrapping her arms around her legs. He knew long minutes had passed, and though he didn't feel guilty about not talking to her, he knew she needed to talk.
Christy?
Yeah, I'm worried about her, John. What we're talking about here with this dead woman in her mind is like possession, like with a ghost or something. I told you my daddy was a hellfire and brimstone preacher in his day. They said he did exorcisms in his church. In the South back then, they still believed in demons and Satan working through people, had to be cast out through prayer and fasting.
Maybe that'd work for Christy.
I don't know, John, but I do know what she's going through isn't easy. I'm going to pray for her and hope my daddy's looking out for me and my friends just a little these days. Sometimes, little faith is all we need.
Morse squinted up at the darkening canopy of trees over the river. Ryan stood next to the boat's captain. He'd rested a while, then taken Jack's place, watching over the man, letting Jack grab a quick nap. Now he scanned the water. The color had gone from green to black as the sky lost the sun.
Gonna be dark soon.
Is there a place nearby where we can put up for the night?
Along here, we can put up damn near anywhere.
We can't all sleep on the boat. It's one thing when the boat's underway. We've got the wind to push us along. But at rest, the boat leaves little space for us to maneuver on. Open terrain offers a better chance to flee or fight. So we gotta have defensible coastline wherever we put to.
There's a cove farther ahead, but there's no chance of us getting there before dark.
Ryan glanced at the thick underbrush along the banks. Over the past hour, he'd seen snakes, insects, and animals he wanted to keep plenty of distance from.
Then that's where we'll head.
Make more and better sense to stay aboard, Junie, if you don't want to sleep out. Running in the dark is triple stoop. Junie ain't lighted for night running.
You do it, or I do it. Either way, it gets done.
Well, I'll do it, but I ain't gonna like it. Gotta get my boys to use poles as we go along. And running slow speed with the wind strong like this is triple hard.
Ryan turned and walked away without another word. He'd save his last shreds of patience for a parley with Elmore. Ryan squinted through the darkness that blanketed the river. The sun had fully gone down below the western rim of the world, and the temperature had cooled, drawing up a thick gray fog that surged restlessly in the pale moonlight. As he approached Elmore, the man looked up at him. Ryan stopped in front of him, out of reach of a quick effort, if Elmore decided to attempt to seize a weapon and take his chances overboard.
What do you want?
You never did say where we'd catch up with Donovan.
You're asking to take a peek at my hole card.
Ryan stood, with the Steyr canted on his hip. He and Jack had already spotted a dozen large amphibians crawling into the water in the boat's wake. Neither of them had been able to identify them properly, but they seemed to be a muty strain of raccoon. The creatures had possessed fur and the familiar mask of a raccoon, but they'd been nearly 4 feet long and had no problem going underwater for long periods of time.
Heading up north the way we're going, things are liable to get dicey. Be good to know where we can look for Donovan. In case.
In case I get chilled? You're a hard man, Ryan. I've got no reason to expect any sympathy from you. Not even a fair shake.
I wouldn't give it. Sympathy's a waste of time. A fair shake's out of the question when your needs conflict with mine, or those of my friends.
So as long as your woman's afflicted, I'm necessary?
Not even then. We got a general idea of where the Heimdall Foundation is. We could find it. So looking at it the way you are now, we don't need you to get there. All that you can do is save us some time. You need to keep that in mind.
If you don't need me, then why not let me go?
I don't need you, but we're gonna use you. You know Donovan by sight. Maybe he'll listen to you long enough to get him to listen to us. People we bumped into that were with the Heimdall Foundation weren't real popular where we were. I reckon that's about the way it is anywhere up here. Baron Shaker's man gave me that impression, too.
There are a lot of people who don't hold with the Foundation and its people. But they're doing important work up there. Work that will maybe answer some questions that happened during the Nukeost.
What happened back then doesn't mean a goddamn thing to me. And I'm gonna ask you again, in case something does happen to you. Where can...
people you run into, they'll be more likely to talk to me than a stranger.
I know.
Just thought you might want to keep that in mind.
Ryan was more concerned about the distance involved, knowing the companions were in for some hard traveling. It wasn't something they weren't accustomed to, but he had to wonder how much Christy could take. He left Elmore sitting against the railing and went forward into the prow. Sandy and Bud used long poles to feel for the river bottom as their father cut their speed to a crawl. Lanterns hung off stout supports from the prow, but the light did little to beat back the darkness. Bud spotted something ahead and pointed.
Cove!
Ryan looked ahead, following the direction of the boy's arm. There, nearly 60 yards ahead, he saw a jog along the riverbank that was almost hidden by low-hanging tree branches and brush. Moore suggested the sail, and Junie slowed a little more and pulled to starboard.
Drop anchor!
Sandy tossed the tri-pronged anchor over the side and started paying out the line. In minutes, the boat butted into